Welcome back to the Carly Pilk Boys podcast. We're talking about the old Ricky Gervais XFM shows, obviously. I'm David Ferrier.
With Stephen Merchant.
We're both radio presenters. I've been a mad fan of these shows forever. This is Zach's first time listening through to them. Today's show, we're talking about Series 1, Episode 15, a.k.a. Zach, I forgot to write an a.k.a. again. A.k.a. Carl's brother. Broadcast the 9th of March, 2002. Zach, overall thoughts?
Well, do you notice in the first 3 seconds of this one, for the first time ever, Ricky Gervais, I think it's the first time ever, Ricky Gervais goes, "You're with Ricky Gervais, and I'm with Stephen Merchant and Carl Pilkington." Carl gets named on the show. He's rising the ranks.
Is that the first time you've noticed that?
That's the first time I've noticed it. Has it come up previously? They might have said previously they're with him, but I just felt like they opened the show with it. Like, he's on the billing now. He's on the poster.
I had a feeling that maybe this one started recording the show had started, because he goes straight
into that story. The intro is
about getting stuck in the bathroom.
Oh yeah, let's get to that soon. But
yeah, we'll get to that later.
But there's a few long-winded things in this one.
Yeah, I had down fairly even-keeled episode. There's no real. There is a big landmark moment when Carl talks about his brother and his career in the armed forces. But overall, fairly, wasn't too combustible. They all seem pretty chill. We'll get to that, the air check soon. I got an email. CarlyPilkBoysPod@gmail.com is how you can get in touch with us. Check this one out, Zach. I'm emailing you from just about the direct opposite side of the globe. It's a small town called Spaniards Bay, in the Canadian province of Newfoundland and Labrador. I've been a fan for about 11 or 12 years. I found the animated podcast on YouTube, and over time, I found the XFM shows, including the Before Carl shows. I listen to them from time to time because they just put a smile on my face. I follow the news and current events, but I have to switch off from that sort of thing and listen to something that can make me laugh. I enjoy hearing you guys talk about the episodes after I give the XFM show a listen. FYI, I was in radio myself a long time ago. It was even before Ricky and Steve. Being 61, I refer to that period of my life as the before time. I'm really enjoying what you're doing. Maybe you'll consider doing the animated podcasts. Thanks very much, Glenn Roach.
Nice to hear from you, Glenn. Isn't that interesting? Opposite side of the planet.
First email from someone in Canada. Thank you, Glenn. I think he summed up what these shows mean to me.
I go through, sometimes when I'm listening, on the YouTube page, I'll go through the comments. Time and time again, they echo similar sentiments. So many people are saying, I listen to it to give me a bit of nostalgia maybe, or just put a smile on my face, or help me go to sleep. It's weird. It's so weird when you think about it, because there is no way in the world that they thought they were going to be making this when they made this radio show. It kind of takes on another life. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, Seinfeld was recently announced to be on Netflix, and that show has been sold so many times to so many different streaming services, online services, and it was first massive on broadcast, then DVDs, then I always think like, oh man, Seinfeld's got a new life once again. And I feel like these shows are similar, they just keep kicking on.
I think the US office recently had that with their Netflix appearance. Now it's the biggest thing on Netflix in the world. And yeah, you're totally right. Seinfeld's going to have the same thing. But
An interesting thing is I've got this, we're all wearing masks now. Maybe some parts of the world aren't anymore, but we're still wearing masks in Australia. And I've got a Simpsons mask. And someone I was getting coffee the other day, and it was a younger barista, probably 20. And they're like, "Oh my goodness, I love your mask." They're like, "I just discovered The Simpsons on Disney Plus the other day." And I go, "What do you mean you discovered The Simpsons? Like, this wasn't something that you stumble upon. Isn't it something that's just was always around? I just couldn't believe." And then I thought about it and I was like, well, it's probably not on broadcast TV anymore, at least not in Australia. It's like, yeah.
Seven, mate, it is.
It wasn't on stream.
But no one young is watching broadcast television.
And it wasn't on a streaming service until recently. So I was like, yeah, there's probably a 10-year gap there where people weren't really watching it. Now people are discovering it. And I felt like that's probably the oldest I've ever felt, is like the idea that this was retro. Like she was like, as if like, so cool, throwback. And I was like,
Did you ask find out what episode she started on at all?
No, but I hope it was in the first eight.
Yeah.
Seasons.
Well, yeah, certainly by 10, the wheels start to come off. Look at what shirt I'm wearing.
Ah, Ion Springfield. That's pretty cool. That's super
from,
cool.
If anyone is a fan of The Simpsons, there's this guy in the UK, actually, runs a Instagram page called Second Best Pet Shop. There was originally the Best Damn Pet Shop page where he sells knockoff merch. But the thing that he has, which whoever is doing the merchandise for The Simpsons, for Disney or Fox, doesn't seem to understand, is that fans of the show don't want a T-shirt with Homer Simpson on it. We want deep cut references.
Actually, and I think nicely I saw this. Designed. It might have been because you shared it. Is there a what's his name? Lee someone's putting challenge, and you can actually buy the cartridge.
Lee Carvello's. Yes, yeah. You can buy, there's all sorts
as if it's like a real game for Super Nintendo or something.
Keychains and buttons and stuff. But I think I've got six of his shirts. So his first account was shut down by lawyers. So now it's now second best pet shop.
And I love how he's going again.
Secretive.
That hasn't deterred him.
No. No, I'll just, that's the internet for you. Yeah. I've got Ion Springfield. I've got a Mr. Burns Casino with the Mr. Burns Casino logo on the back and then a little one on the front. I have a long sleeve that says Die Bart Die on the breast. And then there's illustrations of knives with Sideshow Bob in them. I've got a T-shirt that just has the drawing of dignity that Kirk Van Houten draws. What else have I got? I've got two versions of this one, a black one and a white one. So I'm a little bit mad when it comes to that stuff.
You're 100% right, though. People who make merchandise, they need to go more subtle. You know, you don't want it just to be too in your face. It needs to be something that if you're not a big fan, you don't know what it is. That's probably why they don't want to do it, because they want to advertise.
Oh, yeah. But I wear a shirt like this and someone gets it. You know, I've got a friend for life there. but Glenn hit the nail on the head. It's a total comfort listen, even for me. If I keep up with the news and I live my life, but then when it's time to switch off, or if I'm just doing the dishes or something and I don't feel like listening to something new, I'll chuck on an old XFM show or an old podcast.
Speaking of deep cut merch, do you think there's any band shirts out there for Pilkey's Making Music?
Good question.
Maybe we should make one. You're an artist,
Pilkey's making music. Stand by. I'm just going to have a very quick Google before we get to the air check.
I'd love to have some dates on the back, you know, of a tour. We'd have to find out some venues. I'm sure that he references some venues that he played in the show at some time.
I don't think there is.
Maybe that's what this show can do.
Yeah. I've been thinking about that, to be honest. Just stealing things from the show and profiting off them. Pilkey's making music.
A bootleg T-shirt.
Music, bootleg shirt. Okay, I've made a note. Let's get on to the air check. Series 1, episode 15. So we're straight into the story of Steve getting stuck in the toilet with no toilet paper. A detail that stood out to me with this is, why would a bathroom door have a frosted window?
Well, maybe so you because can it see was maybe it was because I had a friend who had a similar problem at their house, and that was because of a kind of ad hoc renovation where they added a bathroom where it wasn't before. So maybe it was similar. You know, I wonder with those old UK homes, they've probably been gutted and renovated 100 times. You know, you probably do find some funny stuff sometimes.
I feel like you find weird stuff in old UK homes. Like, I think I told you about I stayed at a family friend's place and there was a sink in one of the bedrooms.
Handy.
In a carpeted room, there was just a sink in the corner.
My takeaway from this was I had to keep looking down on my phone. It was 6 minutes long, way too long for what was quite a short anecdote. I'm like, come on, man. And you know when someone's planned their anecdote, you can tell there's a few lines that are in there. Like, you know, he's thought, oh, this will be a good joke. When he says, like, he thought about peeling the wallpaper off the wall to use as toilet paper. I'm like, that was pre-prepared. You are ready for that one. And like, Ricky's not there for it. Like, he's trying to move him along. He's derailing him. And I'm just like, oh, it was a funny story, but it could have been half the length.
Steve's stories, like the one with the getting the car stuck in the farm when they went after Vera the pig and there was the girl that he liked, they're good, but you're absolutely right. They're too long. And he gets too overexcited and speaks too quickly and rushes through them like he is at an open mic night.
You ask someone what happened. You know, something crazy happened. They're like, you should have seen what happened last night. And you're like, what happened? And they're like, okay, so we got there at 6 o'clock. And they're like, no, too far back. Too far back. Start 2 minutes before the event.
So I got the invitation.
Yeah.
It was April. I thought, wow, October is only 5 months away.
The thing that drives me mad as well is like, just lead with the crazy thing. And then we can ask questions afterwards. But, you know, like, oh, it's just excruciating waiting for the big conflict in it to happen. So, yeah, that's just my opinion. Maybe I'm impatient, but I'm like, come on, get to the point. We can kind of do the jokes after I know what happened.
Have you ever been stuck somewhere? Like in a lift or something?
No, I don't think so. I've been like, you know, I've broken down on the side of the road while surfing and I had to walk a really long distance in like the blistering heat.
Oh, you told me that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you were young, right? You were only a teenager.
Yeah, like 18 or something. And we'd surf like half the day because we had no way home. We broke down on the way there. And so we knew we didn't have a car. And yeah, we had to walk down the highway. We got a trolley. You know, like a shopping cart and put all our surfboards in it and then we're just walking down the highway.
No
you
phones?
Do stuff like that when you're... Yeah, no phones. Oh, someone had a mobile, but, you know, back then, like, you didn't have any numbers. Like, you didn't have any money. We were trying to walk to the bus shelter, which was, like, you know, 20 kilometers away.
Yeah.
And by the
this
time we
the
got there...
This was the 1926, by the way.
By everyone. The time we got there, the bus had left. So, we just had to wait there till one of our mums came, like, hours later.
Till they set out an
but
APB.
Never in like a never in like a small space.
That'd be awful. I live in fear of being stuck in a lift or something. Even if I'm going up like a tall building in a lift, I will look and go, that's the corner where I'd piss.
What makes a good pissing corner? Because all the corners in the lift are the same to me. I've never looked at it and thought, that's a good one to piss in. I'll just make a mental note of that.
So you're just saying you would piss everywhere?
No, I'd have a designated pissing corner.
I'm organized. I'm choosing.
I just want to know how to pick it. What attributes am I looking for?
The one that's the direct opposite and back of where you press the button for help.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But to be honest, it doesn't really matter where you piss in that lift. Like, it's really going to have the same effect on you.
It's gonna make its way. It's going to trickle. Yeah. Look, but maybe, you know, I can create some sort of dam with a t-shirt that I'm wearing.
It's good to think about these things. I'm the same person, not in lifts, but, you know, when I'm on a boat, I'm certainly like, okay, so I would grab that. That looks like it would float. And then I would lay on my back and I'd start kicking. I reckon I could probably do that for half an hour. Is land about half an hour backstroke away? Yeah, I'm all good.
Whenever I'm on a ferry, I do look to see where the shore is and I go, could I swim that? Yeah. The answer is always yes. There's always, yeah, no problem.
But, distances in the ocean always look way further when you're at sea level bobbing in the water than it does, you know, 10 meters above when you're on a boat.
True. Break two. For the second week in a row, Ricky's broken the pact that they're not allowed to talk to Carl in the week. But we hear about that he and Ricky and Carl had a drink at the pub. We learned something. 300 bones when you're born, 205 when you're an adult. They all fuse.
Mm-hmm.
They all you come out all soft and spongy. I like that Carl very proudly states that he doesn't slag off Steve behind his back. He waits until he's face to face before he slags him off.
Yeah, he's got his values straight there.
He's got standards. He's got standards. And they talk about the Elephant Man here, or do they just bring up elephants? Because I've just written down elephants liking buns. And that is something that Ricky mentions a lot. Whenever, like, joking about the Elephant Man, like, oh, did he like buns? Now, can anyone explain to me, you included, Zach, where this concept of elephants liking buns came from?
No.
Because I've looked it up on the internet. I can't find a direct answer. So maybe this is one for Briggsy, if you're listening. Is it an English thing? Oh, okay. Is it from some old, like, nursery rhyme or child's story about elephants that like sweet buns? Get in touch. CurlyPilkBoysPod@gmail.com. Any ideas, Zach? Have you heard of anything like that?
I haven't even seen Elephant Man. So I get the general concept, but a lot of this stuff is lost on me. I kind of get the reference, but I'm like, yeah, okay. Moving on.
Well, I might have to make a note of that as well. We should probably watch that.
Right. Maybe it seems together, to be referenced maybe a lot on this show.
Yeah, Carl's favorite movie.
Oh, right.
The Elephant Man.
Okay,
and it is genuinely really good.
Yeah, okay.
Anthony Hopkins plays the scientist. Who plays the Elephant Man? I'm not going to be able to think until I look this up. But David Lynch directed it. John Hurt was the Elephant Man from Alien. Break 3, White Van Carl. A nice little snapshot of March in 2002, didn't you think?
Yes. There's a few references in there, and there's a number of them during this, actually. Monsters, Inc. had just come out. Carl saw that, which we'll get to soon. But, Pop Idol came up again. What else was in there?
Yeah, Will Young, the winner of Pop Idol, Tony Blair, Victoria Beckham's documentary, Being Victoria Beckham, had just come out. I love Carl's little story about seeing David Beckham at a train station, and he was about to go up to him and say, "Did you go to my school? Do I know you?"
He has a comment later on about, I think it's, referencing his history, which I think his history test, which I think is coming up next. But he has a story about someone coming up to him and saying that, a guy from his school, "Hey, Carl, I haven't seen you in a long time." And so Carl's kind of getting a little bit of fame here himself. He's getting approached in public.
Yeah, that's later in Break 5, about when an old mate approaches him and says, "Sorry about your exam results." While we're still on Break 3 in White Van Carl, it does annoy me a little bit. Carl is so misinformed about the strength and athleticism required for downhill skiing.
That's right. There's a lot of people getting upset about this. He thinks it's just balance. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. It's like, have you ever been skiing, Carl? Because it is... It obviously takes some strength in your legs and in your core. Like, even balancing is strength. Like, it's about keeping your body in the right position under duress.
I would love to see a stoned downhill skier, though.
Well, he did seem to, like, he was just so confused, wasn't he?
Yeah, and Ricky and Steve didn't seem to ever really clearly lay it out for him. Like, you understand that, even as you just said, if they had said what you had just said, maybe something would have tweaked for him. Last note I have on this break was that Steve very offhandly mentions, like, when Ricky's trying to get Carl's attention, he says, "Yeah, the light is glinting off your ring." I just noted that Ricky is obviously a ring wearer in this era of his life.
I think he'd be a guy who wears a bit of bling occasionally, a bit of jewelry.
A ring, and there's references to him smoking cigars.
Yep.
Yeah, that just seems fit his personal brand. Oh, and finally, I sort of agree with Carl about just getting on with things when you're sick.
Well, it's interesting in the COVID times, because he says when you have the flu, you should just keep going to work because it's when you stop that it catches up with you, his basic point. It sticks out now, doesn't it, that you're not meant to go outside when you have a cough, or you're meant to stay away from people. I wonder if that kind of sentiment won't be around for generations to come. I wonder how long it will take to come back to people working through illnesses. Or maybe, I don't know, if you're in the UK and everyone's vaccinated, maybe people are working through flus again.
Well, that the UK is going through another massive spike, but unlike here, they are managing it differently. We're still there's a lot of lockdowns happening in Australia, people. That's where we're at currently, trying to get up to 70% vaccinated nationally.
I have noticed that myself. You know, a number of times. So, you know, like at the end of a long working period where it's highly stressful, then you go on holidays and you just get sick on the first day.
Yeah, it's totally. Kind of
like there's something about your body like blocking out the illness. Like you can't be sick.
Definitely. I did last year. I did 5 days in a van with a girl I was dating at the time, like in northern Queensland. And then when I got back, and I was like, I didn't sleep properly the whole time because you're in a van. And then as soon as I got back, I just got so sick. And then this was in the first few months of COVID. So when I realized, because I still just have the default of like, no, I'm not actually sick. Let's see how it goes. And then once I was sure that I was done, I was like, I've killed people. I'm going to jail.
Why? Because you thought you had COVID.
All these old, well, because I'd also been to this, weirdly, I've been to this event, this memorial thing with a lot of old people, and I was thinking of every, like, 80-year-old whose hand I shook, and I was like, they're all dead now. But I got a COVID test, and I was all clear.
But you still, even if you had the flu, I mean, it's still dangerous to the elderly.
Yeah, but that, like, I still...
You're okay with that.
It takes me a while for me to acknowledge that I'm sick. I'm no, it's just a bit of a throat tickle. But then 4 days later when I can't get off the couch and I go, I was infectious during those couple of days. But anyway, they did die, but it was in completely unrelated to me.
You're okay with that. No, as long as the blood's not on your hands.
As long as... but I say I agree with Carl, but mostly for me, it was always out of guilt. I find it very hard to call in sick to work because I'm like, am I actually that sick? But as you mentioned with COVID changing the sort of expectations, I do feel like it's easier now to go, look, I'm doing it for the benefit of everyone else.
People applaud you.
You
know, they're like, good on you, man, stay away.
People are going to be leaning out of their windows and coming out of their houses at 6 p.m. to applaud those who took a day off work sick.
Happy to do
it. Very last thing about seeing things, how long it will take for things to come back around, and you heard him talking about this, and you think you're listening through a COVID lens. I just watched The Dark Knight, a bit of The Dark Knight. It was on TV last night, and before the Joker walks out of that hospital and blows it up, he walks out and like pumps some hand sanitizer and like rubs it in, and I just go, oh, he's being COVID safe. Everything is now different.
Oh, 100%.
Like, you watch everything through a whole different filter now.
I'm looking at my Facebook on this day memories, and there was one that came up in Japan in 2019, and I'm looking at I'm in a market, and I'm looking around. I'm like, where's my mask? I'm like, oh, my goodness. I must have taken it off for the photo. And then I was like, oh, no, hang on. We weren't wearing masks back then. Or, like, you're in a restaurant, and I'm looking on the table in the picture for where I put my mask down. I'm like, there's no masks on the table. It's just so in your brain now. Even the other day, I was like, I used like a fuel pump, and then I wouldn't use my phone until I sanitized my hands. And I'm just like, that. I didn't even think about it. It was just like ingrained in me. I was like, wow, your brain can like rewire in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, the habit has formed and it's gotten in deep.
Yeah,
but you'll be showing that photo to your grandkids.
And you go, look, probably.
It's before anyone wore masks, and they'll go, "Shut up, granddad!" And
I've thought that about on their hoverboard because I've had a daughter in the last year, you know, a kid, and I've thought about that in regards to radio, what we're talking about now, and you know what we did. You know, I've thought previously, I was like, "Oh, my grandkids aren't going to know what radio is." But then as it went on, I was kind of like, maybe my kids won't know what radio is. And I don't think they will. You know, by the time my kids 10, 15, 20, it will be like, oh, back in the day, dad was on this thing called radio. Like, and you'd have to explain it to them.
It'll be there. There'll be some version of it. It'll be like vinyl or the fax
machine.
Say
it's like,
it'll survive in some way.
I think we'll say like it's like podcasts, but it was live. They'll be like, wow. And so how did you skip? No, well, you didn't skip. If you didn't hear it, that was it.
Oh, and they knew that, so they just pummeled you with ads.
Yeah.
Break four, talking about the Gulf War vets with PTSD. And it's not exactly the most handled the most sensitive in the most sensitive manner.
Don't you think Ricky? I was thinking during this, Ricky's the one with the reputation as being the edgy, offensive one. Steve has some opinions that are just like, why would you go after veterans? I don't understand. Like, a number of times he'll target people that I'm just like, why did you pick those people? Like, it just seems like a very strange target to pick. I just think there's certain people that you don't go after. And that would be one of them. Veterans seeking, post-traumatic stress compensation. I was like, ugh. I don't think so. And it's for such a kind of cheap joke as well.
Yeah, yeah. He at least has the grace to say, look, I don't know all the ins and outs of it. He at least gives that sort of...
Yeah, but I thought I could feel some tension in the others. I was like, I'm like, is Ricky just going to stay silent here? Or he kind of, you know, does a bit of an adjacent riff, about someone who's joined and not understood what they were signing up for. But, yeah, it stuck out to me. Did it stick out to you? I was just like, ugh.
Yeah, totally. But it happens occasionally. I also put it down to it was partly, like, the time 20 years ago, and partly just sometimes, like, Steve does go for the... I'm going to say it like I'm sitting here in judgment, but it's what this whole podcast is about, like, sort of the hack comedy premise of, like, oh, they're soldiers and they have PTSD. They didn't like their experience. They are claiming PTSD because they saw bad things in a war. But that's what being a soldier is about. So,
can I be like the worst person at the party for a second? Because I felt like this as I've gotten older. I love Jerry Seinfeld. That was like the stand-up I listened to when I was a teenager. And as I've gotten older, though, like a lot of the bits, I still enjoy them. But like a lot of the bits are like, I understand why the thing is the way it is, so he's making fun of it, and I still have fun with it, and I still think it's funny. But like, he has this funny bit about like, why do skydivers wear helmets? Because once you leave the plane, the helmet's wearing you for safety. That's kind of the gag. But now that I'm older, I'm like, oh, it's so you don't hit your head on the way out, and then you're concussed while you're free falling. That's also, you don't run into someone else midair. It's like, makes perfect sense. And in a similar way with this, with the post-traumatic stress stuff, I'm like, yeah, no, they're not. It's not the fact that they have post-traumatic stress. It's that they haven't been given the right facilities to deal with that. You know, that's what the issue is. It makes perfect sense.
So you're finding your fact-checking comedy.
I know. It's the worst person. I know. I understand that I'm sucking the air out of every party, okay. But I just can't help it.
When I listen
to comedy bits now based on like these false premises, I'm just like, yeah, but like that, it actually makes perfect sense to me. I do feel like there's a lot of Seinfeld bits now that I'm like, oh no, but I know, you know, it's actually quite explainable why they do it that way. But I wondered, is that the internet? Maybe that's the internet, because like all these things that you go like, what's the deal with airplane food? And it's like, oh, well, because they have to keep food hot in this little trolley in a canister that's flying through the sky for 10 hours. So it's going
to
be pretty shit.
And that like, they have to feed 250 people in a flying cylinder tube. They have to find a way that makes it work. But maybe
in the 80s and 90s when these bits came out, maybe it was harder to figure out. You know, maybe there was nothing, there was no Google that you could just search, oh, so why does airplane food taste so rubbish? So anyway, I just feel like I'm sometimes I just have to bite my tongue because I'm like, oh, I don't want to ruin everyone's fun with logic.
But you're not going to ruin everyone's fun. You're just going to ruin your own fun unless you start making a point of going around and going, hey, are you familiar with this Seinfeld bit? Well, let me tell you what's wrong with it. Let me tell you where the logic flaws are. Until we get that sort of content on TikTok, I think you'll be all right. But look, the best comedy that I like the most is the one that summarizes and shines a spotlight on like a truth and then presents it in a totally surprising and funny way. So if that like element of truth is false, then I get it. You like that, you lose me there. It doesn't, it's a house built on sand.
And I think it's also the way you present it. If you present it in the way that I don't understand this, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, because then you go, oh, well, cool. You don't understand it. That's, and you're coming up with ways that, about how they could have come up with it, rather than like being above it and being like, this thing's so stupid, how dumb are they? By the way, I've done exactly what I've done. Not exactly what Steve said, not at all. But like on the radio, I have made fun of things in a way that was really, I just was ignorant.
That's it.
Of the reason why they did things. I'm just thinking of this now. I forgot all about this. I'm like, yes, I've done similar things where we had people call up and like they're really cool off air and they'd say, oh, just so you know, this is why it happened, why they do it that way. And it was for reasons, you know, experiences of people that I hadn't experienced myself, which is exactly what ignorance is, or not, you know, I hadn't explored or researched those areas before. And I just felt so bad. I was like, oh my goodness. And they were like, no, we're not like getting stuck into you, just want to let you know. And they were like, there was a really probably a perfect way to go about it, the way that they kind of brought it up. But it wasn't like, ooh, okay, that does make sense. So now when I kind of like say something so silly and I like try to make fun of it, I like try to look it up first to be like, there might be a reason why it's silly. Or, you know, it might not be as silly as I think it is.
Mm. Have you ever heard of the Northern English greeting of Chuck?
Never.
You're right, Chuck.
Oh, see, I thought that was just like a name for a man. You know, like how you'd say mate or...
Well, I think hey that... Man. I think
that's... Is that...
Oh, I think it is along those lines, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Because I've listened to these episodes so many times, only do I know even that much that it's like an expression. But I don't know anything about the origins or the background. So I like,
is it offensive?
Like the thing... No, I think it's like a just a like you said, like mate or man or.
And then why did the was it because it wasn't an official? Because
it's
way
so
to
informal.
Address...
Yeah, right. Like imagine if you called up some high ranking official and were like, "G'day, mate. Can you not send my son to the Falklands?"
Or maybe it's like, you know, I know that I've had relatives who are older in my life get upset when the petrol station attendant calls them champ. They'll go like, "G'day, champ. What's it, number 4 today, is it?" And they'll come out back to the car and they'll be like, "That, you know, that 20-year-old just called me champ."
I don't know what to do. I'm so offended.
No, they're just really upset about it. It's like a, I don't know, I guess it's like a elders thing, you know, respect the people older than you.
Hey, champ, do they know that it means champion?
Yeah, he's saying you're a champion.
He's saying you're
it's a
champion.
It's a term of endearment.
That's way better than sir.
Yeah.
If anyone knows, yeah, like the elephants and buns thing, give us a bit of background on the on Chuck. Is it purely in Manchester or is it all of Northern England? I'd like to know. We then get to the landmark moment where Carl just so offhandly mentions that his brother got kicked out for going for a packet of fags in a tank and then having an affair with the sergeant's wife. Zach, this is the first time you ever heard that. So walk me through thoughts and feelings.
Well, the first time I thought he was just smoking cigarettes in the tank. That was my first, the way it was said. And then Ricky, specifies, you know, do you mean that he nipped down to the shops? And so I was on the train and that got me good. It was very funny. The image of someone going down to the shops out of the army barracks, turning left in this tank.
Yeah, do tanks have indicators?
Yeah, good question. Tick, 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 tick. And then also just the idea, even the idea that, you know, he had an affair with the sergeant's wife. It's so reckless, isn't it? Like, it's just like, he just doesn't seem to care about anything.
That man's a trained killer.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing storytelling from Carl. And the detail that his brother's life has fallen apart and part of what he describes
again,
as... His wife being in order was he had a wife and they used to collect crystals.
Yeah, what does that mean? Like the way that people collect crystals today?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe they were charging them in the full moon.
Yeah. But Ricky points out something that you've pointed out here before, which is like that Carl's stories often are really funny, then they end really sad.
Yeah.
Because he says at the end that he hasn't talked to him in 12 years. And it's like, oh, okay. That's taking the wind out of it.
Break 5. We mentioned this earlier that an old mate of Carl's bumped into him in the street and said, sorry about your exam results. I like Suzanne's words of wisdom that you didn't even have an E last week. That's quite sweet.
I was just going to say, don't you think that's such a fun level of fame that he seems to be getting now, though? you know, that's the, you want the fun level of fame, where like people occasionally will come up to you and go, hey, I listen to your show, you know, but it's not at the level that you can't do things or you're harassed or people are taking photos of you.
Yeah,
it's that- just fun. You get, you know, you get something free at the at a restaurant, or you know, it's people that shout out to you.
That comes in the future for Carl, but I feel like it's come back full circle. Well, because Ricky starts encouraging people to start shouting at him. You've got a head like a fucking orange. Really, really advocating for people to be nasty to Carl. But I feel like it's come full circle now that we're so many years removed from it. Remember, we had an email early on in the run with the guy who said he saw Carl on the street and he said he'd just seen a man eating a Twix, an old man eating a Twix. And Carl said, I'm not having it. Like, that's a reference to something that happens later. That seems like a more sweet little encounter. Did you have anything to say about the Che Guevara summary? I've got nothing to say, just that he did well.
No, I wish I was kind of thinking that, you know, they go, what year was it? And what year did he die? And I was thinking it might be better to ask some open-ended questions, like what do you think about, you know, those types of things, especially around the philosophies. You know, it was about socialism and a socialist revolutionary. I thought it'd be interesting to get Carl's thoughts on that type of thing rather than just the dates, because... You know, if he gets the dates wrong, what is that? You know, I don't think it means anything. Yeah. That's not really funny to get a date wrong.
They don't really get into at all what Che Guevara was about, what he was into, just that Che means buddy.
Yeah.
And that when he was shot, he said, be a man, do it. They talk about complaints to the BBC around the person wearing the Che Guevara t-shirt. Did you know, I looked this up, the record for the most complaints was broken recently. Any idea what it was regarding?
Oh, could it be
in the last couple of months?
Could it be something to do with COVID and no. like lockdowns? No. Okay, what else?
To do with the royal family.
Oh, was it about Meghan and Harry?
No, but that's a good guess. I thought you might say that. No, it was a complaint about the coverage of Prince Philip's death. Oh. Not about the manner in which it was done, just that there was so much coverage.
Right.
So, here it is. The BBC's wall-to-wall coverage of Prince Philip's death has become the most complained about moment in British television history, as viewers expressed their annoyance that shows such as EastEnders and MasterChef were replaced with royal tributes. At least 110,000 people have contacted the BBC to express their displeasure at the decision to turn most of the corporation's TV channels and radio stations over to rolling tributes to the Queen's husband. MasterChef is on the BBC. How weird.
It's very different over there. I watched it when I was over there once. A lot less dramatized than ours is.
Yeah. It's
kind of more documentary-esque, whereas ours is like, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. They are milking it. Also, I think it's a fairly unique to Australia thing. We have the broadcast week. So, a show like MasterChef is on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Whereas the traditional release schedule is like, oh, it's once a week.
Well, because we have a smaller population, so they build all the sets and stuff and they want to make the most of them. So, they really got to juice it. Like, our Survivor goes for much longer. Survivor. Our Survivor goes for much longer than any other international one because they have to keep it going longer. They have to show more episodes because if they're going to put the money in getting people over to Fiji, they got to get their money's worth.
Watching an episode of Australian Survivor alongside American Survivor is like watching the Australian one is like watching a rough first assembly edit of how, like, the American one is so tight. They do not waste any time.
Because the Australian one, though, is like each episode is 30% longer, you know that?
And they make three times as many episodes.
Yeah, and they make more, and they just totally throw the format out the window. They just like, whatever. I like Survivor. I have a bit of a history watching Survivor. So, that could be another podcast.
Okay, your Survivor podcast.
Are you into Survivor?
Not really, but a lot of friends who I really trust their taste in things. I've got a lot of people who I respect who really love Survivor. They're obsessed with it.
It's an
and I feel like you probably fall into that camp.
We made one. We made a Backyard Survivor like a year ago, just before COVID. It was my friend's project. I just helped him film it. We got like 5 cameras. He invited 20 friends over and he did a day. He put so much effort into it. We had like drones and everything for fun. He wants to make a web series. Like it's a kind of a genre. There's a few people in the world who have made these Backyard Survivors. Like there's like these similar to this, people who are on Reddit now talking about this show. There's like Reddits and stuff of people who make them. It's been in the edit for over 18 months now. We always get stuck up in for it. Like because we're like, man, but he bit off so much. It's like 8 20-minute episodes or something. Like it's a lot that he's trying to pull together.
Wow, he's trying to make a little series out of it. Cool.
Yeah. It's more fun. It's kind of like when you make a cubby house as a kid, you know. Once you've made it, you don't do anything with it. It's boring as. It's the fun is making it.
It's the journey, not the destination. Funny you mentioned the word Backyard Survivor. In 2002, the year that this episode went out, my couple friends and I made a little short film for a competition called Lights, Camera, Fox Kids, which was like a Foxtel channel at the time. And it was called Backyard Survivor. And we did a parody of Survivor, just the three of
hilarious.
Us. But it was a bunch of 13-year-old boys like fighting each other and stuff. Anyway, we won an award. Yeah, we did. We won the reality category.
Nice.
It was early 2000s excess. There was a whole award ceremony for this film competition in Sydney, and the friend whose name was on the application, it was his camera basically, or his parents' camera. He got flown to Sydney with his dad for the award ceremony, which was like it was put on like it was, you know, the Oscars. And the award that he got up and collected was presented by Sarah Marie. Remember her from Big Brother?
Oh, yeah.
And he had to get up on stage. My friend Martin is 14 or whatever. And he's like, oh, I'd like to say thanks to Dave and Rob and my brother. Thanks. And it was broadcast. And then they started showing our little short film every morning on Fox Kids for about 3 months. So then I got recognized for it at school. But I was very insecure and I did not enjoy that experience. And in fact, yeah, to one person I've told you this about this?
No, I've never heard this.
In the bike racks, this kid who was younger than me, but he was one of those like scary BMX kids.
Yeah, right.
You know, like he was cooler and scarier than I was.
Had stunt pegs on his bike.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He probably smoked a cigarette. Not at all. Probably came...
Sure, wasn't tucked in.
No chance.
I know the type.
Spat, you know.
Some big fat DC shoes, probably.
Probably had FUBU on. Wasn't afraid of teachers. You know, just the worst. I was locking my bike up and he went, "Oi, you're on Fox Kids." And I panicked and I said, "No, I'm not." And he said, "Yeah, no, I saw you on the thing." And I said, "I have a brother, you know." And he went... He just saw right through me. So then for a couple of years after that, anytime he saw me, he'd shout Fox Kids.
Yeah, so but you know the way that it comes across? I mean, you say that you were insecure. The way it comes across to him is that you're a superstar who's wearing their shades and doesn't want to be recognized.
No, please.
Yeah.
No, I felt like I showed a vulnerability. I showed him my soft belly and he attacked. Whereas I should have been like, "Fuck yeah, I was on TV. How cool is that? High five. Can you show me how to do a wheelie?"
Well, there you go. You're kind of experiencing what Carl has in this episode. The low levels of fame.
Yeah, we both were experiencing fame in 2002. I still tell people I'm an award-winning filmmaker, by the way. Break Six. They just quickly talk to the guy who's done the PhD on Che Guevara on the phone. And Carl mentions the sad fact that his teacher, Mrs. Matthews, said he'd never be a high flyer and that no one said well done to him. Mm. So sad.
He seemed genuinely chuffed by that.
Yeah.
That the guy had said that he did a good job.
Yeah. It was nice. Sad. Break Seven, talking about the old uses of contraceptives, the orange. They get into some Shakira lyrics.
That dates it as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, very time and place. And whenever I hear that Shakira song, those lyrics, they do make me smile, partly because they make me think of this show. They're lucky that my breasts are small and humble, so you don't confuse them with mountains. Is that your dog in the background?
Sorry, can you hear that?
Magnificent.
I'm not sure.
Greyhounds?
I think you might be able to hear it on Zoom. I'm not sure if my microphone will pick it up. There's been a big snake in the yard, and I had to pull them off it the other day. They were like, you know, it's this big snake. It's like 2 meters long, and they found it. I thought it would stay up in the trees, and so I wasn't too worried. And then I heard them barking at it the other day, and I had to like, we don't put collars on them in the yard because the collars can get like caught on sticks and stuff, and we don't want them to choke themselves. So like, I had to like grab them by the scruff of the neck, and they're big dogs. They're big greyhounds. I was like, pull them off this snake, and it, but like, because they're so riled up, like I was worried that they were gonna like bite me, like,
yeah,
accidentally.
Get bitten or something. Oh yeah. right
The snake was coiled up, you know, like ready to strike.
Yeah,
it was a big snake too. It was like, and I was like,
were they nipping at it, like trying to get a hold of it?
Like they I think they could have attacked it if they wanted to. I think they were just saying like, get out of the yard, or trying to draw our attention, but they were like going at it pretty hard, and the snake was riled up. But I watched the snake, because I got rid of the dogs, and I watched the snake leave the yard, and I was like inspecting it. They didn't get it, so that's good. They didn't bite it. It was
if
all
you
intact.
Want to, is it the snake that's on your TikTok and Instagram?
Yeah, go have a look. It's pretty
Zach funny. Manda. That's a really funny video, the one about going to work in Australia. It's not all like that down here. We don't all walk out into our balconies and find a 2 meter long python.
Yeah, it was literally in front of my front door. I walked outside
that is
and
just,
I was like, oh, geez.
Zach's area is particularly grassy
it's
and
because
and
it's
foresty.
Because there's a tree next to my balcony and it likes living in this tree, but it was decent size, yeah.
And they're not dangerous necessarily. They won't try to. They're not venomous. You can.
There's not venomous. There's two types. There's venomous snakes. They're bad.
Yeah.
There's constrictors, you know, pythons, and so they wrap around their prey and choke them, which is a horrible way to die. but they're not big enough to do that to humans. It's like it's like rodents and possums and things like that.
They're actually I love a coastal carpet python. They're awesome.
It's just
I wish
only
I came
thing
across
is when
more
they startle
them.
You. It's only when they startle you. So if you walk outside and one's there and you haven't seen it before, and they're often like up around head height because they're like hanging out in trees and stuff. It's
so
just
you just
when
turn
they...
and make eye contact with one nearby.
That's
I've only ever encountered them on. Well, I've only actually really encountered one proper big one, and that was when I was out on a walk in like a rainforesty mountain area. So that's like where you sort of at least half expect. Or it's not as much of a surprise. Like, I'm in inner city Brisbane. Oh, which my suburb is, for everyone listening, my suburb's called Tenerife, which comes up as a reference to the show, a holiday destination for Carl. And I'm in like a block of flats. So if I saw a snake in here, I would be very shocked. But where you live, it's a bit further out. So it's a bit more normal. But yeah, go look that up. Zach Manda. Z-A-C-H-M-A-N-D-R. What else have we got? Oh, yeah, Carl's dad used to drive the black cab. Another one of Carl's dad's old jobs. And they talk about how he used to pick up as they describe her, the female version of the Elephant Man. Just crazy. Crazy times in Manchester in the 80s, it sounds like.
Well, even the fact that he just sat in the front on a box.
Yeah, not even on another chair, just on a box. And they wrap it up with Carl's life advice. You can't plan it. Good advice. And that Carl went and saw Monsters, Inc. at the movies. So did I, Carl. So did I. But I was 14. Did you see Monsters, Inc.?
I remember liking Monsters, Inc. I don't recall if I ever saw it in the movies or not. Probably not. I wasn't a big movie goer as a kid. Probably a DVD situation.
I think I saw it twice at the movies, actually. It's good. Good Pixar gear. Good Billy Crystal performance. What we learned, that you're born with 300 bones. You have 205 when you're an adult. Carl waits to slag Steve off to his face. Carl's brother got sacked from the army for going for a packet of fags in a tank. We learned about Che Guevara and that Mrs. Matthews said Carl would never be a high flyer. We learned that oranges used to be used as a contraceptive and that Carl's dad used to be a taxi driver. And we learned Carl's life advice is you can't plan it. So we learned a lot in this episode. Key phrases. I had one when Ricky says...
Look at Carl. I love that look at Carl. Carl is looking back and forth. You know when you sort of, you go to a cat... And it looks back and forth between two people. That's very much like Carl's looking at us now.
Or when, like, a child sees a midget or something in the street. They're just transfixed, aren't they?
I love that because I can totally understand what he's talking about. And I even wondered if they used that as a reference to the illustrators later on for the animated series. Because I thought, oh, wow, that kind of comes across in those crude animations that they do later on. You know, the way his eyes dart around on these little round head in those animations. That reminds me of a cat kind of watching the world go by or watching a laser pointer.
That's a reference Ricky uses a bit. It's like talking to a cat that they can almost understand you. Favorite bit?
The tank.
I'm
getting the impression that it's pretty iconic to the show, yeah. But that's the bit I laughed at the most.
Yeah, same here.
No, he ended up being a mechanic in there, and he got kicked out for going for a packet of fags in a tank.
What? Now, wait a minute. Do you mean he nipped down the shops in a tank?
Yeah.
I don't believe that, Carl. You've
honest
made that
to God, that, and he went off with the sergeant's wife. So that didn't help, and he ended up getting kicked out.
Sorry, your brother's a genius.
That's it for episode 15. Next week, episode 16, the idea to send Carl up in the air on a chair with hundreds of balloons strapped to it. That idea is first brought up, which I know we'll talk about on the episode.
Yeah.
But it finally happens many, many years
later.
Yeah,
that's right. It's on Not an Idiot Abroad, the next one.
Is it Moaning of Life?
Yeah, Moaning of Life.
I've been thinking about this, and we'll go into it further at a later date, but those Idiot Abroad episodes and then Moaning of Life, it does feel like they wrap up a lot of the plots that are introduced in these shows and in the podcast.
I think An Idiot Abroad is the best travel show I've ever seen.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
It's just the one that has the best hook, the best reason to kind of happen. And the idea, too, of like it's such an interesting twist to be, like, everyone on those travel shows are usually so over-the-top positive and, like, you should come here. It's such an interesting idea to have someone who doesn't want to go, like, and is finding more interest in, like, you know that clip of him dancing at Machu Picchu? Like, he's got the headphones on. It's just so funny that he's finding more enjoyment in, like, just having this opportunity to listen to music and dance than enjoy the cultural moment.
And when he's at Petra, you've convinced me that it is. I just said, yeah, definitely. But then I immediately thought, wait, is it my favorite travel show? Yeah, just convinced me that it is. Cause
and he's got so many. He's like his assessment of all these like historic, iconic landmarks, like just the way that he kind of dismisses. You know, his take is always so pragmatic. It's just great.
Yeah. But then things like at the pyramids, he then goes, yeah, on the travel shows, they always show you the pyramids, but they never show you this. And it's like swirling bin bags and just rubbish everywhere. But then he goes to the KFC, which employs all the deaf people. And like, that's what he gets a real kick out of.
Yeah. It's actually fascinating to watch him.
Yeah.
And But so I really like the spin they put on that. And, you know, maybe that's a time and a place that we're not going to get back to for a while. Travel shows.
Oh, God. Contact us, carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com. Love getting your emails. Keep them coming through. Follow Zach Mander on TikTok or Instagram. I'm on Instagram as well, David Ferrier Cartoons. Zach, see you next time.
See you, Dave.
Oh, I don't like moaning anyway, just...